Hello, I'm Lisa Fizette. This is number 0151, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
There, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0151. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Frank Cipolla, who is the author of It Shocked Even Us and More Crazy Stories Covering Local News. He urges people to get a balanced view of the news, not just from outlets slanted to one side or the other.
I would urge everybody who feels as though they know the issue inside and out to take a moment and read about it. Find out, even if you go to the internet, not necessarily a right or left-wing blog, or find an independent newspaper or news source that you like and find out both sides of the issue. It's important to a democracy. It's important that you know both sides of the issue. Don't let a talking head on a station give you a bumper sticker that encapsulates one very nuanced issue.
Jessica Canseco is one of the stars of the reality show Hollywood Exes. How does her ex, former Major League Baseball player Jose Canseco, feel about her doing the show?
You know, Jose's been pretty supportive in everything that I've done, from the book to the Playboy over the years. You know, he's not the one that makes the decisions in my life, so regardless if he was on board or not, it's not a show about him. It's a show about us women and what we are doing today. And if they're on board or they want to come on, Jose comes on the show and he's there supportive of Josie and what my decisions in raising her, that's great. But it's really not, ultimately, it's not about them. It's about us and what we bring to the table.
Stuart Nallman is back with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nallman, and it's Delta House Against the Rules with the story of the making of Animal House with Fat, Drunk, and Stupid. So Delta pledges, get ready to return to Faber College right here on the Stuff File program.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0151, is Lisa Fizette, reporter at Global Montreal and soon to become the managing editor at Global Montreal. Congratulations, Lisa. You'll do well in that gig. You'll be great. Thank you very much for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. The Stuff File program now heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, remember going over to Grandma's house? Yeah. As soon as you opened the door, you could be hit with the great smells coming from the kitchen. Usually she had baked something just for you. You felt loved. Now let's talk about another grandmother. A 3-year-old boy slept for 3 days after accidentally eating his grandmother's cannabis cookies. The boy ate the biscuits after finding them hidden in a garage refrigerator in Murrieta, California. His grandmother has cancer and had a doctor's recommendation for marijuana to treat her pain and help her sleep. Well, I guess it really works for sleeping, doesn't it? Police Sergeant Phil Gomez said the boy's family called an ambulance when he didn't wake up after sleeping for more than 16 hours. It wasn't until the child was taken to the hospital that the connection between the cookies and his long nap was made. Sergeant Gomez said the family members could face child endangerment charges, although he noted that the child seemed otherwise well cared for. It's unfortunate, he said, that they didn't take better steps to keep the cookies out of reach of the child. Well, you know, they were in the refrigerator in the garage. Anyway, the grandmother claims she's not going to be making them ever again. Meanwhile, I'm sure Junior loves his grandmother even more. Plus, I'm sure he has a hankering for large amounts of Doritos. Moving right along, talking urinals have been installed in U.S. bars as part of a campaign to cut down on drunk driving. Set off by a motion sensor, the gadget delivers a message warning pubgoers about the perils of driving under the influence. Now, customers are greeted with a message that begins with, "Hey, listen up. That's right, I'm talking to you. Have you had a few drinks? Maybe a few too many? Do yourself and everyone a favor and call a cab." The campaign was introduced in bars in Michigan in a bid to cut down drunk driving ahead of the Independence Day celebrations this year. We put a very serious message in a unique place with a little humor, said Anne Riedet, who is from the Office of Highway Safety Planning. The message ends with a friendly, oh, and by the way, don't forget to wash your hands. Yeah, okay. Now, I've never been drunk, so I wouldn't know the full effect. But even stone cold sober, it's got to be a little freaky when you're standing there and you have a urinal talking back to you. That's all I'm saying. Okay, around 135 bungee jumpers leapt from a bridge at the same time in front of a roaring crowd. Onlookers screamed and cheered at the mass bungee jump from a railway bridge in Russia. A video uploaded to YouTube shows the mass bungee and then jumpers swinging together above the river below. And yes, you can see the video in a link on my webpage at thestufffile.com. I have put it up there for you to take a look at it yourself. You know, watching this video, it kind of reminds me of the advice that most mothers told us when we were kids. If your friends jumped off a bridge, would you jump off a bridge with them? Well, apparently for these 135 bungee jumpers, the answer is yes. Policemen in Australia are reportedly lining up to join the hunt for an armed robber dubbed the Buxom Bandit. The curvaceous blonde, believed to be in her 20s, is on the run after holding up a gas station at knife point on Queensland's Gold Coast. Police are hoping to catch up with the woman, who was captured on closed-circuit TV and who has made a series of schoolgirl blunders. Her biggest mistake was failing to hide her face or her long blonde hair, and police are hopeful someone will identify her from the video. She did remember to wear a glove, but she put it on her knife hand rather than the one that was leaving fingerprints all over the gas station. No one was hurt in the robbery, but while the Buxom Bandit's mistakes might cause some amusement, police are not smiling. There were a number of serious threats to harm the attendant, and she fled with a small amount of money, a spokesperson for the Queensland Police said. Now, I've seen the video of her crimes. She definitely is called the Buxom Bandit for a reason. Now, despite the fact that she doesn't wear a mask, I'm guessing many of the people she robbed can't, for the life of them, remember her face. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Germany's Spiegel Online reported in April that police in Hamburg had charged a 33-year-old man with 96 burglaries based in part on the ear prints he left at each scene when he leaned against the door, the front door, to detect whether anyone was home. DNA and fingerprints were also collected, said a police source, but ear prints are of similar value as fingerprints in terms of evidence. Life is getting much tougher these days for old school criminals, aren't they? Yeah. Anyway, on to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. HBO recently premiered their latest series, Aaron Sorkin's The Newsroom. After only 2 weeks on the air, it was renewed for a second season, and the show has seen phenomenal numbers in the ratings. So this is an opportunity to talk about the business of news gathering. On the line with us right now is media expert Frank Cipolla, who is a 30-year veteran in the media as a news reporter on TV and radio. He's the author of It Shocked Even Us and More Crazy Stories Covering Local News. He joins us on the line from New Jersey. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Peter, and great to be on, and great to be on with everybody in Montreal. The lovely bride and I actually visited Montreal for the first time last summer, and we absolutely loved it.
Excellent, excellent. So have you watched The Newsroom?
Yes, I have. I thought the first episode was a little choppy, and the second episode was really more like a newsroom is. It's very difficult, as you know, Peter, to replicate what a newsroom is like, especially in time of breaking news. You really have to be in that environment, but it was pretty damn close, I thought, the second episode.
I find it very interesting that a lot of the critics seem to be up in arms against the show, and I think one of the reasons is because the critics are actually in the business, so to speak, of news gathering, and obviously, you know, with cop shows, most police officers never draw their weapon. Medical shows don't look anything like the medical shows or the medical situations in the real world. But for some reason, television critics expect this show to be exactly like their newsroom, and there's no way it could be.
It's true. And, you know, and they're covering a medium they're familiar with. A lot of them are. And I don't remember any television news show about news that actually came out that any of them liked. The determinator will be whether the public likes it. And so far it seems that the public does.
Well, could Aaron Sorkin have benefited from your book, It Shocked Even Us, and more crazy stories covering local news?
I'm glad you mentioned the book, and it's available at itshockedevenus.com, just to let you know. But, yeah, I think so. You know, you and I were talking before the interview about how a lot of the stories that I tell in my book are similar to stories involving everybody who's worked in radio, especially small-time radio, and then worked their way up. The beautiful thing about this book is I part the curtains and actually let the people see what goes on behind the scenes. I hasten to add, I'm not critical of the business. This is a love letter to this business, but people need to know what happens in every single radio and TV market in the United States and in North America, for that matter, behind the scenes. It doesn't always go so smoothly. You might see the finished product and it looks good, but there are very funny things that happen along the way.
People who have been in the business for a long period of time, they certainly have opinions on how the business is changing, so I'd like to get your thoughts, for instance, on how social media seems to be changing the newsroom. Some people say it's for the better, some people say it's for the worse. Where do you come down on this one?
Well, I have mixed emotions. I like the fact that there are more cameras out there, more flip phones, more iPhones taking video. I like the fact that there are quote-unquote iJournalists out there. I think the more cameras you have out there, the more eyeballs you have out there, the more easy access to the Internet, instantaneous access to the Internet, is good. Where I have my concerns, though, is there's not a layer of editorial review. If some young man or woman sees a car accident, and as they're videotaping and somebody passes by and says three people were killed in that car accident, and he immediately puts it up on the Internet, then there's no way of verifying that. He didn't speak to the police officer. An editor didn't question him, where did you get that information? It's just up there. So I think the best description is, and Morley Safer, who's on 60 Minutes, has a sign in his office that says, I'll trust a citizen journalist when I trust a citizen surgeon. And I think that's really telling. You know, you could say you're a journalist, but to be a journalist is to learn the business as I did, as you did, to go to school, learn where everything happens and how it happens and how it's supposed to happen. Another concern I have is, a lot of the younger people on TV nowadays, the story is about them. And if you went to journalism school or even studied it in college, you understood that the first rule of journalism is it's not about you. It's about the story. It's about the person. It's about the interviewee. It's not about you. I don't like the fact that a lot of the news now has to reflect that the reporter get involved, or the reporter be part of the story, or many times the reporter is the story when he or she shouldn't be.
How do you feel about the polarization of news? You have, you know, Fox on one side, MSNBC on another side, and it seems to be happening not just in cable news, but right down the line in radio, also in print, and obviously certainly in the blogosphere.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, I don't like that. I don't think that people should listen to one end of the news, whether it be left or right, just because they feel comfortable in their own quote-unquote echo chamber. And I'm not making a comment on left or right. I'm just saying I have urged everyone in my interviews I've been doing about my book that don't let the media give you an opinion. And often because we're busy paying our mortgages and going to work and driving our kids to soccer, that we don't have the opportunity to read up on it, on an issue, and get both ends of it, because it's not always black and white. It's often nuanced. I would urge everybody who feels as though they know the issue inside and out to take a moment and read about it. Find out, even if you go to the Internet, not necessarily a right or left-wing blog, or find an independent newspaper or news source that you like and find out both sides of the issue. It's important to a democracy, whether it be the United States or Canada. It's important that you know both sides of the issue. Don't let a talking head on a station give you a bumper sticker that encapsulates one very nuanced issue.
So your book is called It Shocked Even Us, and More Crazy Stories Covering Local News. So as someone who is a veteran of over 30 years in the news business, what shocked even you?
That's a very good question. The book's title, It Shocked Even Us, came one night as I was working at a television station in New York City. And again, I'll hasten to add, I spent most of my career in and around New York City, but these stories are These stories are from every newsroom in North America. They happen every single night. The story of it shocked even us came after there was a lot going on a particular day in the news. And I remember it distinctly, but we led with the dopiest of stories about a guy who tried to rob a convenience store and fell through the ceiling. And of course it was caught on tape, Peter. You know, it always is. And we led with this silly story. And the anchor, who was less anchor and more of a carnival barker, actually said, this video is so shocking, it shocked even us. And I said to myself, is it really shocking? Was this so shocking, that guy falling through a ceiling and hitting a bread rack and then falling on the floor? Was that so shocking that it led the news that night? And I thought to myself that often video, if it's compelling, and in this case the editorial folks at this station thought it was, will lead the newscast when so many important nuanced stories are left to the back of the newscast. And I thought that was unfortunate. That's where the story begins. But, you know, I saw shocking stories all along the way. These are the funny, shocking stories. The other ones I try to forget.
do you think people would be surprised by, because, you know, as broadcasters, we have to have a lot of empathy for the stories we do, the stories we share, and how we present it out of respect for the participants within the story. But do you think the general population would be surprised by the sometimes gallows humor that takes place in a newsroom?
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, every news person I've ever worked with has a macabre sense of humor. The things we say off the air when something hits are often funnier than anything else, you know, we'll ever hear. But you're absolutely right. I've worked in radio, I would say 17 or 18 years of my 30 years in the rest in television news, and I'm back in radio. And, you know, my lovely wife, who sold radio advertising for a very short time, came home one day and said, How do you work with these people? I don't understand how you work with these people all the time. And I said to my wife, I said, Bride, you either get the joke or you don't. Radio people are the kids that ran away with the circus. And this is the way we are. We work hard, but often it's because we enjoy talking and kibitzing and being with each other. And part of the fun is the macabre sense of humor when a story crosses your desk.
As you mentioned, you started in the business when people had the opportunity to work in smaller outlets and work their way up to bigger markets. If you were starting today with the technology that we have and the business the way it is right now, what would you do differently?
Oh, that's a very good question. I think probably I would be more forward-thinking. Back when I started, probably back when you started, Peter, there was radio and there was television news. And the internet wasn't around, clearly, certainly. Newspapers were around, but I never aspired to be a newspaper, actual print journalist. But, you know, that's a very good question. I would probably be, as so many stations are across the country now, what we call a one-man band or a mojo, a mobile journalist, where you go out and you're part radio reporter and you're part TV reporter. You go out, you do a radio story, you have a little camera, you videotape a bit. You go into your car, you edit there on some sort of software, whether it be Avid or whatever the case may be. You track it, meaning you voice over the script. You put the chyrons on it, which are the identifications of the people in the package, which is the report. And then you send it up on a Skype line. More reporters now are essentially radio reporters, but working in TV. I think I would have gone in that direction if I was starting now. Back then, of course, when we started out in radio, there were small radio stations. We could have all the, and I say it in the book, where you can embarrass yourself every day, but you got better every day. And by the time you went to a medium market, you were better. And by the time you got to a major market like New York or Los Angeles, you had worked out all the kinks. You had seen a lot, and you were much better. Nowadays, sadly, a lot of people who are on in these major markets had never got that chance to work in AAA baseball. They went right to the major leagues, and you could tell on the air.
I can tell we're about the same generation because you used chyron as a verb. And when I mention that very word in the television newsroom that I work in right now, they don't know what I'm talking about.
No.
And for those who are listening, the chyron is the fonts, the name of the reporter or the name of the location that you see on the screen when a story is shown on TV. So there you go.
Yeah, exactly. I said to a young reporter in the newsroom the other day, make sure you get your zig out done. And the zig out is your identification at the end of the report. I'm Frank Cipolla for the Wall Street Journal Report, whatever the case may be. And she didn't quite know what a zig out was. But I guess that term's older now. I'm not sure, but that's what we used to call it. We still do.
One last question very quickly. Your book, which is It Shocked Even Us and More Crazy Stories Covering Local News, I'm sure it'd be a great trip down memory lane for those of us who went through the business or watch the business during the time period that you were on. Would you say it's a good primer for those who are getting into the business today?
I don't know if it would be a good primer, but I will tell you this. It's a wonderful summer breezy read. You could take it up to the mountains, to the lake, wherever you might go. There are small, funny, digestible stories that involve very popular people you might know. The time I interviewed Al Pacino, the time I covered Liza Minnelli's wedding, all digestible, funny stories. To answer your question, if somebody was reading this now, they probably wouldn't recognize what we saw 20 and 30 years ago when small-time radio, Peter, was really the Wild West. I mean, anything went. This is before there were any rules, and I tell stories about disc jockeys who had, they'd play a long record, and they'd go in this small back room, and they'd smoke marijuana until the record was over, and they'd come out, and I'm sure you saw that over the years. So, you know, a lot of funny, I guess the biggest claim to fame, and I don't know how many people in Canada know him, but I did the news on WNBC in the mid-1980s for Soupy Sales. And Soupy Sales was a kiddie show host in New York City back in the 60s who was on the tail end of his career and got back into radio where he really had started. And the stuff I saw with him working with Imus in the Morning at the time and Howard Stern and Soupy was there and myself, that's worth the price of the book, which, by the way, is $20. It's in an e-book form, and it can be ordered right there on that site at shockedevenus.com.
Frank, thank you very much for being on the program with us. It's been a pleasure to talk to you tonight.
Peter, it's been great. Thank you so much, and a pleasure to speak with a real radio person like yourself.
Frank Cipolla, author of It Shocked Even Us and More Crazy Stories Covering Local News. You can visit Frank's website at itshockedevenus.com. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0151, and you'll find links to Frank's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're experiencing the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Sit back, relax, let it rattle around between your ears, tickling your cerebellum, and enjoy.
And still to come on the program, we will talk to Jessica Canseco, one of the stars of Hollywood Exes. And Stuart Nolman is along with another edition of Book Banter. Plus, of course, we have an idiot of the day and lots and lots and lots of stuff, including more stuff right here right now. London's Hayward Gallery staged an exhibition in June of invisible art. Now, this is pieces that depend almost completely on the imaginations of the viewers. For example, 1,000 Hours of Staring by Tom Friedman is a blank piece of paper that Friedman eyeballed off and on for 5 years before deciding that the object was finished and display ready. Yeah. Friedman also submitted an empty section of floor space, which he said was once cursed by a witch. Also there, an Andy Warhol bare platform that looks like it should have something resting on it, but it doesn't. And, by Yoko Ono, a typeset of instructions urging patrons to imagine some stuff. Okay. Is it just me, or are artists getting extremely lazy, and or are art patrons becoming extremely gullible? Okay, Calvin Hurlvey is 35 years old. He was charged with attempted auto theft in Tulsa, Oklahoma in June after jumping into Jeremy Penny's van and fleeing. Penny and his dad took up the chase and caught Hurlvey. Said Penny later, "I rodeo. Dad and I both rodeo." When police arrived, Hurlvey had been neatly hogtied and secured to a fence, explained Penny. "Lately I've been having bad luck keeping calves tied in rodeo, so Dad did the tying up." Okay. I hope there's a picture of this out there somewhere. So far I've checked the internet. All I found is a picture of Calvin Hurlvey's mugshot, but no picture of him hogtied, because that would be priceless. And here are a couple of stories of some people with serious issues. Number one, Charles Marshall, age 28, was arrested in Cincinnati in June and charged for the fourth time in 2 years with crimes involving exposing himself and simulating sex with a teddy bear. It's not reported whether or not it was the same teddy bear. And number two, a 36-year-old man was arrested in Harvard, Idaho in May and charged with indecent exposure. A newspaper account reported that the target of his flashing was a dog, which he was allegedly trying to entice to approach the fence and nuzzle the man's genitals. Okay, I don't know about this. I tend to keep potential wild animals with sharp teeth away from my exposed genitals, but that's just me. And now it's time for movie cliches that come to life. Tragedy struck Poplar Bluff, Missouri on June the 5th when five teenage girls parked their Jeep on railway tracks at night at a spot notorious in local lore for the ghost train that once killed two people. As a train approached at 12:30 a.m., the girl driving tried to start the Jeep, but, as in the movies, the engine failed. Three girls fled, but as in the movies, two were not able to unfasten their seatbelt in time and began screaming. One of the girls returned and helped one trapped girl escape, but the rescuer and the other trapped girl died when the train hit the Jeep. Yes, the Darwin file, because the tree of life is often self-pruning. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a Pittsburgh group comprised mostly of young men has been meeting weekly to discuss and debate their favorite TV show, My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic. Organizers of the Pitts Bronies group, which includes 124 people who identify themselves as Bronies, that's a combination of bro and pony, said their group is about 63% male and about 62% between the ages of 18 and 24. John Drake, who is 24, a doctoral computer science student at University of Pennsylvania, said the group held its first meeting last December and members now meet on a nearly weekly basis to debate their favorite episodes and the best characters on the show. Edward Garbade, who is 19, a friend of Drake, who founded the CMU Bronies, which is a group at Pittsburgh's Carnegie Mellon University, said Bronies will admit the show was created for young girls. Okay, so they haven't completely lost reality. But it has a higher entertainment value than previous installments in the My Little Pony franchise. The show teaches lessons about friendship and being nice to others, a message from childhood that seems to be forgotten, unfortunately, often in today's culture, Garbate said. The characters have distinct personalities, engaging backstories, and remain consistent from episode to episode. Both men said they will be in Secaucus, New Jersey, for the BronyCon Summer 2012, which organizers said is expected to draw about 2,000 fans and will feature show creator Lauren Faust and voice actors as special guests. Live in, let live, I always say, but there are some people out there who seem to have way too much time on their hands. Anyway, on to our next guest here on the Stuff File program. Jessica Canseco is one of the women who stars in the VH1 reality television series Hollywood Exes. She is the former wife of former baseball player Jose Canseco. Jessica's autobiography, Juicy, Confessions of a Former Baseball Wife, was published the same year as Jose Canseco's memoir, Juiced. And Jessica joins us on the line right now from California. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. It's nice to have a chance to talk to you once again.
I know, it's great talking to you. How many times has this been? Like three times now, right?
This will be the third time. Now, the last time we spoke, you were just getting engaged. And,
oh my God, has it been that long?
Yeah, and that particular union is now in the past, correct?
I have been divorced since October, yes.
Wow, okay. So does that give you extra points, by the way, in Hollywood Exes?
No, we don't make any reference to that ex.
Okay. So who are the other, I understand, is it four women who are on the show?
There are four women. Nicole Murphy, who is married to Eddie Murphy, Will Smith's ex, Cherie Fletcher, R. Kelly's ex, Drea Kelly, and Maite Garcia, who is married to Prince.
Okay, so do you ladies get along? I guess the whole idea is, for a little bit of drama, and you don't necessarily get along, but what was it like getting you ladies together to start the show on VH1?
You know, what's funny is that Eddie Murphy's brother was the one that brought Nicole Murphy in and pitched the show idea, Vernon Lynch. And she came to all of us because we were all friends, and most of us, I mean, we're friends already, and pitched the idea to us, and we were like, this is sounds great, it's empowering of women, and we really like each other, and let's bring in a couple new, you know, girls on the scene, and we're gonna do this. And so the concept was great, and here we are.
So how were you approached to do this show?
Through Vernon Lynch. He was the one that brought the idea to the show, and they called me up and said, you know, would you be interested in doing this reality show? And the fit was right. That's all I can say, because there were a lot of girls that, you know, interviewed, and it was just the right fit of girls. And the women are amazing. I mean, I can't complain. They're my sisters. We have a little sisterhood, and we're pretty close, all of us.
I'm just curious.
I can't promise you we don't fight. We do have little cat fights, but we come together at the end of the day.
Okay. I'm just wondering if there's room for one more, because just about a little over a week ago, Katie Holmes filed papers to divorce Tom Cruise.
I saw that. Oh, what's going on there? I might have to call her up and see what's going on. I did see that. I saw that was happening. So I feel sorry for, you know, her and her situation. I know what it's like to be divorced twice, and you know, my heart goes out to her.
So, would there be ever a possibility for you? I mean, you've gone down the matrimonial aisle twice now, as you just mentioned. Are you still open to the idea of doing it again?
Well, here's the thing: three times is a charm, or strike three and you're out. No pun intended, but. You know, I'm open to the option. If it happens, it happens. I'm just taking care of Jessica at this point in my life.
Taking care of Jessica, and of course, taking care of your daughter too, right?
Oh yeah, of course. I have my 15-year-old daughter, but it's about me, and it's about taking care of Jessica and doing what Jessica wants. I have my business, and you know, I'm a hands-on mother. I'm actually the mother and the father, so it's important to me that I show my daughter, and I'm a role model for her. And taking care of myself, finally.
Now, you say your daughter is 15, right? That's a very, as I'm sure you're aware, a very impressionable age, the teenage years. Was there ever any concern on your part of joining a show, a reality show like a Hollywood Exes, knowing that your daughter and or her friends would see this show?
You know, I was a little hesitant about it, but when Vernon and Jeff, they were the producers of the show, they came to me and they pitched the idea, and it's really about empowered women coming together. At the end of the day, we have the same story. You just change the names, whether it's Kelly, Smith, Canseco, we've been in the same light, and we change the names, but we're the same women, and we've walked the same path, and we really understand each other and get each other, and we're empowering each other. If we can do it, and we can walk away, and we're successful, and we're not bitter, and we have our businesses, and we take care of our kids, and we're hands-on parents, anyone can do it. And that's kind of the light we're trying to show here with the show. So I really wasn't reserved in the idea of doing the reality show after what they brought to me.
Now, the thing about reality shows, especially ones involving people who are wealthy, it has to travel this fine line. As I'm sure you are aware, there are people out there who are going to say, oh gosh, it's the rich people from Hollywood and their poor little lives, I don't want to see that. And as you say, there's the other side of the coin where it gives the audience a chance to see people who are empowering their own lives and doing their own things after they have been in a situation where they are somebody's ex. Do you ever concern yourself with that fine line? I mean, it's one thing to be part of the show, but since the show hasn't aired yet, you have to worry about how's it going to be edited, how's it going to play out, how's it going to look, and will it do you justice?
Well, of course, you think about those things, but at the end of the day, you know what? I support myself. I take care of myself. We all take care of ourselves. We're empowered, you know, with each other, and we rely on each other for support and friendships. But nobody can take anything away from me. It doesn't matter if somebody watches me and likes me or watches me and doesn't like me. At the end of the day, I have a successful business, and I'm a business owner, and I take care of myself. So, you know, not everybody's going to like you, and not everybody's going to be for you in reality. But, you know, this is a chance for us to showcase what we do, and we're not just in the shadows of these men. We are strong, powerful women that have succeeded. We're not just sitting back and we're just collecting checks. We actually take care of ourselves. We actually make our own money. And that's what the misconception is that we are just sitting there and we've taken checks over the years and we do nothing. All of us have businesses, you know, all of us have furthered our education, and that's what's so powerful about this. And that's what's impressive.
Are you still in contact? Are you on speaking terms with Jose?
Yeah, I am. Actually, Jose comes on the show. You'll have to watch.
That's what I was about to ask. Was there any hesitation on his part when he first found out you were doing the show? I mean, obviously, he's, as you say, he's on it, so he got past that. But was there any trepidation on his part when you first said, there's a show I'm going to be doing called Hollywood Exes. How do you feel about it?
You know, Jose's been pretty supportive in everything that I've done, from the book to the Playboy over the years. You know, he's not the one that makes the decisions in my life. So regardless if he was on board or not, it's not a show about him. It's not a show about Will Smith. It's not a show about Prince. It's a show about us, women, and what we are doing today. And if they're on board or they want to come on, Jose comes on the show and he's there supportive of Josie and what my decisions in raising her, that's great. But it's really not, ultimately, it's not about them. It's about us and what we bring to the table.
You mentioned your self-sufficiency and your business. Tell us a little bit about your business.
Well, what I do is cosmetic and medical tattooing, which is the standard cosmetic procedures, which are lips, brows, and eyes. And then I do a lot of medical procedures, which are mastectomy patients, stretch marks, scars, and a lot of burn patients. And I have a business in Beverly and Bedford Drive, and it's great. I mean, it's a great business. It's something I love. I've furthered my education 10 years ago, and I'm very artistic and passionate about what I do. So I think that makes all the difference. When you really enjoy something you do, it makes all the difference. And I've had my business for about 5 years, and that's what I'm kind of promoting on the show as well.
And the show, which is on VH1, when does it premiere?
It premieres Wednesday nights at 9, 8, 7 Central, or 9, 8 Central, I think, on VH1.
Excellent. Jessica, continued success, and it's the third time this charm, as it's certainly not a strikeout, third time's the charm that you've been on this program. Hope to have a chance to talk to you again in the future.
Thank you. You guys are amazing. You're great. Thanks a lot.
Jessica Canseco, one of the stars of Hollywood Exes on VH1. Check your local listings for the day and time for the show. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. With all of the talk lately about the cost of health care, I've been thinking about something that the president of a large medical school once told me. He said that the most expensive tool that a doctor uses is not something big, like an x-ray machine. It's something simple, a pen. That's right. With the number of lawsuits against doctors skyrocketing, many of them are using their pen to order extra tests. Tests that can be used as evidence to defend themselves. It's given rise to a whole new kind of medicine called defensive medicine. The federal government estimated that defensive medicine adds as much as $125 billion to the cost of health care every year. Let's be fair. Because of the recent Supreme Court ruling, much of the cost for these extra tests will now be covered by taxpayers. Let's put an end to the need for defensive medicine. Liability reform that ends lawsuit abuse could save taxpayers billions. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
He's back. Yes, Stuart Nauman with Book Banter. Hello, sir.
Toga. 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 I got a quiz for you, Peter. I wonder if you could tell me what movie this line is from, okay? Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way of getting through life.
Animal House.
Oh, yeah. You guessed it. Said by the late John Vernon, especially in that scene where Flanagan was about to throw up on his desk. Now, if you remember the summer of 1978, like I do, one movie that I really wanted to see so badly was National Lampoon's Animal House. For two reasons, I loved the magazine. I read it for like 3-4 years at the time. And of course, it starred John Belushi from Saturday Night Live, which that show I was an addict. I watched it religiously every Saturday night during that time. And I wanted to see the movie, and the problem was, thanks to the Quebec rating system, I couldn't see it. I was 15 years old, and you had to be 18 years and over to see Animal House.
Unless you worked in a movie theater like I did.
Yeah, you probably got to see it.
Ding, ding, ding.
So, yeah, that was very disappointing. But a year and a half later, I finally got a chance to see it, the old Cinema 5. And you know what? It was worth the wait. I never laughed out loud at such a movie. You know, it's one of the few times I really laugh out loud at watching a movie, and that was one of them. And this movie, Animal House, which was made with a small budget of $3 million, with a cast of mostly unknown actors, with the exception of John Belushi and Donald Sutherland, directed by a mostly untested John Landis, Animal House became an international box office hit. It grossed over $600 million worldwide, and is constantly ranked as one of the top movie comedies of all time. Now, Maddie Simmons, founder of the National Lampoon magazine, who was also the producer of Animal House, was right on the front lines of the movie's development. He vividly recalls this journey of the making of a classic comedy in his absorbing behind-the-scenes book, Fat, Drunk, and Stupid. Now, the book starts off with Simmons recalling his own career before the Lampoon. He worked in PR and was instrumental in creating publications that raised awareness of and launched the success of Diners Club and Weight Watchers. He then chronicles the evolution of the National Lampoon as a comedy launchpad. He then traces the evolution of Animal House as basically the logical next media extension of the National Lampoon empire, which went, you know, Broadway shows, radio shows, books, records, you name it. Now, Animal House evolved from two sources. First, from the best-selling parody of a 1964 high school yearbook that was published by the Lampoon around 1975. And second, stories about Lampoon writer Chris Miller's fraternity days while in college during the early 60s, which he chronicled in the magazine. Now, basically, Simmons attributed to the success of the movie to how the right talent from every aspect of the production was brought on board to work on the picture. But what was amazing about is the ensemble cast, because mostly they were virtually came from nowhere. For example, Stephen Frears, who played Flounder, was working as a pizza delivery man, and Kevin Bacon, in his film debut as Omega House Pledge Chip Diller, was a struggling actor in New York who was working a day job as a waiter.
Oh, but wait a minute. He was also one of the stars, a teenage star, on The Guiding Light.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. You're a soap opera aficionado, so that's right. You do know that. But Maddie, in fact, I don't know if Maddie mentioned that in the book, but thanks for clearing that up, Peter.
Oh, my pleasure.
Then Chip Diller was almost like the role of a lifetime. But Simmons tells so many interesting stories about what went on during the making of the movie, from the boardroom to on location in Eugene, Oregon, to the startling box office success of Animal House that caught everybody by surprise. It's a great treasure trove of behind-the-scenes storytelling that devoted fans of the movie will not get enough of, yet Simmons manages to keep the reader quite satisfied. Like, for example, the abortive attempts to develop an Animal House sequel, in which one proposed scenario had the middle-aged Deltas return to Faber to disrupt Dean Wormer's retirement ceremony. What happened to the Animal House cast since its release? And case in point, Dwayne Jesse, who played rocker Otis Day, he legally had his name changed to Otis Day and is currently performing around Las Vegas with his own group called, obviously, The Knights. So if you held a toga party or participated in a free-for-all food fight, can recite Bluto's Germans Bomb Pearl Harbor monologue verbatim, wildly dance to shout, or went to a beer-fueled road trip to pick up girls, you were caught up in the Animal House phenomenon. And if you can't get enough of the never-ending battle between the renegade Deltas and the stuck-up Omegas of Faber College, then you'll enjoy reading Fat, Drunk, and Stupid.
And by the way, those keeping score at home, if you want to remember Kevin Bacon from The Guiding Light, he was T.J. McIntyre, the adoptive alcoholic son of Dr. Sarah McIntyre. The fact that I remember that scares me.
That's the thing about us trivia buffs. You know, we memorize so many minute details and can, you know, just spew them out. Yeah, it can be scary.
Anyway, the book is?
It's called Fat, Drunk, and Stupid by Maddie Simmons, published by St. Martin's Press, and it's $29.99.
And other recommendations you have?
Well, if you want to read a little more about John Belushi, I do recommend Bob Woodward's 1984 biography, Wired. I think it was the first book that Bob Woodward proved he could write more than just President Nixon and the Watergate scandal. Terrific book. And also Chris Miller, one of the people who wrote the screenplay of Animal House, along with Harold Ramis and late Doug Kenny. He wrote a book called The Real Animal House, and it's basically his experience, the memoir of his experiences in his college fraternity in the early 60s. And you see the parallels of what gave him his inspiration for the Deltas and the Omegas and the characters that inhabited both houses. Fascinating book, actually.
And since you brought up radio and also albums, I'll make a recommendation that is not a book, and that is the National Lampoon album, That's Not Funny, That's Sick, which is hysterical.
Oh, in fact, Maddie, in his book, Maddie Simmons does concur with you, saying that that album really was probably a comedy gem.
And a lot of it which you cannot play on radio. If anybody out there has a copy, and I do, just for your own smile, just play the part where Christopher Guest plays Mr. Rogers. That's all I'm going to say.
All your voices in that album, actually.
Amazing voices.
Oh, yeah.
Richard Belzer's in it. There's a whole bunch of people in that.
Oh, yeah. What an organization.
Yeah. Anyway, the book is?
Fat, Drunk, and Stupid by Maddie Simmons. It's published by St. Martin's Press, $29.99.
And people can find you, Mr. Stuart Nolman, how?
Well, it won't be at a toga party, but it'll be at the West End Times. You can read me every week, published every Saturday. Or you could find me, Not a Favorite College, online, but at www.westendtimes.ca.
Thank you very much, sir.
Food fight!
Stuart Nolman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
This is the Stuff File.
And we're almost through with this edition of the Stuff File program. Of course, we do have an Idiot of the Day coming your way. And before we get there, a few more Stuff File news stories. Bill DeWeese, a Democrat, and the 135th Speaker of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, and John Purcell, a Republican, and the 136th Speaker, know each other well. they'll get a chance to extend that relationship now that both of them have been sentenced to time at Camp Hill Prison for corruption in separate cases. Both men are serving at least 30 months, and when Purzell, the first one in, heard DeWeese was sentenced to the same prison, said he'd like to share a cell with DeWeese. John, DeWeese replied, I don't think we pick who we get to room with here. But sure enough, DeWeese was given a choice. He could bunk with Purzell or with Michael Manzo, his own chief of staff, whose testimony helped convict him. DeWeese chose Purzell as his cellmate. Wow. It is somewhat surprising that there aren't several prisons dedicated solely to ex-politicians. But it's nice to see that finally a Democrat and a Republican can get along and be roomies. I think there's a sitcom here. And police in Phoenix pulled over a driver at 11 p.m. after he allegedly caused an accident, or almost caused an accident. Manuel Pena, age 19, admitted that he had been smoking marijuana and was on his way home after a beer run. He was arrested for driving under the influence. Officers gave a ride home to his passenger, which was his girlfriend, Catalina Clauser, age 19, and their two-month-old baby. Now, 2 hours later, police got another call. A baby was found in the middle of the street in a car seat. Clauser apparently didn't want to stay home on a Saturday night, so she drove to a friend's house, 12 miles away, to smoke more pot, she says. She then headed to another friend's house, and when she arrived there, she found her baby boy wasn't in the car. She realized she had left him in the car seat on the roof of the car. Wow. By the time she retraced her route, police had taken the boy into protective custody. He was unharmed, by the way. Clauser was also charged with DUI as well as child abuse. She was released from jail after being told by a judge that she cannot see her baby, drink alcohol, or drive a car with another passenger under 18 years of age. Wow. This sounds like a scene right out of the movie Raising Arizona. If you haven't seen Raising Arizona, rent it or buy it. It's a great film. And Brea Pursley, age 13, a student at the Century Academy of Excellence in Inglewood, California, says her science teacher told her to, quote, sit your nappy-headed self down. Other students laughed. Brea, who has had several disciplinary problems at the school, told her mother what happened. The teacher called and apologized, but when the girl's mother, Sharonda Williams, called Principal Giselle Edmond to complain anyway, Williams says Edmond declared that, quote, and I love this quote, bad things need to happen to mean kids. And then she expelled the girl from the charter school. Yeah. You know, it's almost kind of hard to argue with that kind of logic. And here's a tip for you. This is probably the top item not to put in your child's sippy cup. In Phoenix, 36-year-old Valerie Marie Topete was arrested at a pizza restaurant after other patrons witnessed that she poured beer from a pitcher into her 2-year-old son's sippy cup. No kidding. And yes, the kid did drink some. When police arrived, Topete admitted pouring the beer in the cup, but said she only did it because the child kept reaching for the beer pitcher. Wow. What would she do if the kid kept reaching for Drano? Anyway, officers explained the contents of the cup and determined the liquid was consistent with beer. The child was taken to a hospital for precautionary reasons and was later released to the care of his father. Meanwhile, Mrs. Topete is being held on suspicion of child abuse. Not exactly a winner for Mother of the Year. Like the one we had 2 stories ago, she wasn't the winner for Mother of the Year either. But I digress. Anyway, it's time right now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff I present, the Idiot of the Day.
In Panama City, Florida, in May, Michael Marquez, age 34, who had been arrested with another man after being caught fighting over suspected stolen goods, was seen snatching a clock off the wall of the room in which he was being interrogated. He had stuffed it into his backpack when an officer left the room briefly, but was recorded on surveillance video. So now, instead of stealing time, he's going to be doing time. And you have to ask the question, you just have to, why would someone who was in an interrogation room at a police station think that they could steal the clock off the wall and actually get away with it? One reason, and one reason only, he's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0151. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0151. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Void where prohibited, offer slightly different in Canada. For a complete transcript of this program, next time write down everything Peter says.